you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you, I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you, we're glad you're here.
Reading from Psalm 19, verse 10b. They are sweeter than honey from the comb. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Wednesday, June 15th, 2024. Well, Rob, this may be a new record of throwing together a program with zero notice, little show prep, but we have Rob, our copy editor, in the studio with us, and we're going to talk about this month's Prime Lifetime publication. It's informative, it's engaging, it's positive, and this is the May edition, Volume 8, Issue 5. We've been overseeing this publication
6 or 7 years now.
It's been in existence for over 30 years, but it was donated to us, and so we've increased its distribution and its readership, over 32,000 monthly readers in over 400 area locations throughout West Central Indiana and Central Illinois. It's called the Prime Lifetime Publication. And I have Rob in the studio with me. As I mentioned, we're just pulling this all together. It was like late notice, but he was able to get over here. And we had a fabulous class last night on Tuesday nights. It's been basically every other Tuesday for, I think, 6 weeks so far. And we still have a few more weeks to go. But we've been training future editors, future content contributors, people that are interested in knowing more about the Prime Lifetimes and maybe volunteering or assisting. Even Tad Jagish is working on a story in Bloomington in the coming days.
And Mark, we already have one person in the class doing cold read reviews after the basic edit. And we have another person who's already submitted an excellent, fun, heartwarming article that'll be in the June issue. So I'm just thrilled about that.
Yeah, it's a great gathering. We've met every other Tuesday night for a couple months, and Rob's been taking us through a whole list of things. In fact, last night it was getting to know your dictionary and the great resource it is. You know, you grew up and you had a dictionary, but it's fascinating how much information and insight and the ways you can use it to increase your storytelling ability or to be a good editor or proofreader. And so Rob, who is our copy editor these last 6 years, joins me in the studio. I call him a free agent for Jesus. He helps preach and teach and shares. He's Mr. Servant. And if you have a need, he usually is somehow involved in helping meet that need. But he's been a good friend, a dear friend for many years. And so he joins me in the studio, and he's a big-time content contributor also, along with being a poet and trivia and other information and stories that he submits. So where do you want to start today, Rob?
Well, let's start on page A15.
A15.
And let's just read maybe a little teaser from the Honeybee Trivia Quiz answers.
And I should mention also, Rob was being a technician. For some reason, the studio setup here, there was some kind of setting change or something. It took us about 15 minutes to figure it all out, and it's all working again. But that's
the sad thing is we don't know what we did that worked.
I tried some different cords and did this and plugged in different things, and so it's working, and you're hearing us, which is a good thing, but it really eliminated all time to talk about what we were going to talk about. But you have some interesting information about the honeybee.
Yes, and I grew up, my dad kept honeybees, my grandpa kept them, my brother kept them, and I kept them. Now, my grandpa on the other side was diabetic but didn't know it, and so one bitter cold day, he went and robbed a bee tree, which was a favorite sport of farmers in those days, and got several tubs of honey, brought them home, put them near the stove so they would not crystallize, not sugar up. And just before bed, he said to my grandma, who lived with us from the time I was 3, whom I knew very well, said, "I think I'll have a little honeycomb and a glass of milk before bed." Hmm. And he did. And as she put it, the next morning he woke up dead.
Oh, jeez. So,
and that's biblical, because remember, when they woke up, they were all dead men. But anyway, then the doctor said, "Oh, wait, I think he had diabetes." So anyway.
So it was that quick? Just
yeah, just like that. He just died in the night. He had super high blood sugar, apparently. But it's a wonderful food as well. And I want to read just two items from the responses here. The the answers to the quiz.
In fact, there are 16.
Yeah, and you know, if Mark had read this in detail before it went in, he might have prohibited such a long article. But the first fact I want to read, and you know, I thought I knew something about bees, but as you research these things, you find out you might not know as much as you think.
Mm-hmm.
A worker bee can make about 1.5 teaspoons of honey in her lifetime.
That's all?
Yep, that's it. It takes about 1,152 worker bees to make a pound of honey. And then if you go to number 3, the answer to that question is honeybees visit about 2 million flowers to produce a pound of honey. Well, when I make tea for my wife, I typically stir in about 1.5 teaspoons of honey, and I'll remind her tomorrow morning that that represents the life sacrifice of one worker bee.
Well, that's why amazing. Maybe we call hard workers worker bees.
I think so,
they
yep.
do a lot. And I saw this article some weeks back and was saying to Esther, guess how many eyes honeybees have?
Uh-huh.
And she was like, well, like 2. And I'm like, no. They have 5 eyes.
Yeah, yeah, yes. They even have different purposes. So that's an amazing animal that God created, of course. I don't think it evolved from anything myself.
How about the queen bee? On an average, a queen bee lays 1,000 eggs per day.
Per day. That would be a tough job, wouldn't it? Imagine a chicken that would lay 1,000 eggs a day.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And then if we go on to go backward in paper to A12, we have a whole page of May poetry. So we can read one of these poems. I don't think we have room in the program for very many. But Mark, you pick a poem and I'll read it. How's that?
How about The Woodland Calm?
The Woodland Calm. This is our Christian Farmer
poem. And then we'll go to Happy May. We have enough time for 2.
Okay. Woodland Calm by Paul J. Harris. And he's a farmer who's a believer. And you can tell this in his poetry. In
the quiet, we're all believers. It's just do we believe
in whom and in what, right? In the quiet of a woodland morn, sunbeams filter through the trees. I hear the gurgle of a mountain brook and a distant chickadee. Let the earth rise up and sing, for God has blessed this land. In the quiet of a woodland morn, I feel his loving, mighty hand. Lay me down in woodland calm in my eternal sleep, so I can see the face of God through the towering forest trees.
Hmm.
And then by special request, Happy May, which I just happened to write. Out from under melting snowdrifts come the blossoms first we see, elegant and cheerful tokens of the hope of spring to be. Rivulets break free of icing, swollen creeks make happy song, and our hearts swell with that music now that nights are not so long. Bravely, bulbs yield up their flowers as the days give up their chill. This exciting resurrection gives a frost-nipped heart a thrill. Nights can still be rather frosty, days can still be sunless, drear. Snow can still come on the cold wind, but we know spring's almost here.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers long to start their planting. Gardeners their plans compare. Earth will now receive the slanting, still cold rains, soil to prepare. Timeless seasons still as ever. Springtime, summer, harvest too. They come back to us each 12-month. Snow well melted, planting dew. Winter's back at last is broken. Soon will come a warmer day. I crown thee queen of all my fancy, and I greet thee, Happy May.
Happy May, everyone. Hey, that 12th month, is there a history to that word?
That's a very old word from about the 1400s, as I recall, but it just means every 12 months, every once a year. And I'm old enough to be able to tell you that if I live a couple more weeks, I'll be 79 winters old.
Oh, 12 month. And what's it called when you have the rhyme, when you
alternating rhyme.
Alternating rhyme in poetry. I always resonate towards those.
I like
the rhyme and the rhythm.
Yeah,
and
but Paul wrote a beautiful expressive poem and it doesn't rhyme. Mm-hmm. And that's still quite, in fact, one night one of our students said in the class, in the writing and editing class, you know, maybe we could have a class on how to write poetry, but it might be a whole other level. You know, poets are born, I think, and then they work at it. So,
all right. So that
on page A10, if we have time.
And yeah, I should point out, if you have some skills to pen, there's that, I can't remember, it's one of the Psalms where do you pen before the king or something? It's one of my favorite ones when we talk about this. But if you have a gift of poetry or you want to submit something that you've written, we take submissions and then our editorial team looks through them and picks out something and picks them out. And then it might be published in a future edition. And you were talking about, I think we only had one for June right now, or June or July. So,
but it's a long one, Mark, so it might be enough.
It might be enough. All right.
The fact is, we are always interested in seasonal or month-related poetry. In this case, we had all poems related to May. And in June, we have one poem, but it's quite a nice poem about June. But if you write poems about times of year, about seasons of year, of the year, that sort of thing.
Yeah, 4th of July, Independence Day, that could make it into our July edition.
That's right. There's plenty of time, but don't wait. Send it in to Nick, and you can find his email address on, I think it's page 3, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, if you need more information about content contributing, maybe you have a story or something you want to share, primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com, and you can go to content contributor, look around the website, and you can find out more about being involved with this publication. Maybe you want to send a subscription to a friend. It's $30 for a whole year, and that includes the postage to send it to you. So
I've sent them all over the country.
Yep.
Well, this story on page 810 is part of our Rural Memories series, and it's called Canoe Trip.
Mm-hmm.
In May 1963, neighbors and classmates Steve and Gerard and I would graduate from high school. Gerard had a job lined up at a tire factory. Steve had a college opportunity in Canada. I had a summer railroad job. I was 17, Steve and Gerard 19. Professor friend Paul Fjellsted invited us on an overnight canoe trip on the Mississippi, but Gerard couldn't go. Paul brought along fellow math and physics professor Dick Hamlet, of coal black beard and deep red hair, and it shows you what kids remember, right?
Yeah.
Erudite and brilliant, these professors had Harvard PhDs and taught at nearby Shriner College. Paul lived on Steve's family farm. He was always up for fishing, swimming in deep, fast water, and other dangerous adventures boys gravitate toward.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do a quick aside. He once taught us how to make a Molotov cocktail right after the revolution against the Russians in Hungary. Paul's wife, Giovanna, dropped us in the canoe north of Bellevue, Iowa. I had left a vehicle at Marquette Park in Savannah, Illinois.
Giovanna, the goal was to canoe downstream to that car?
Yes,
okay.
Right. Giovanna would drive my vehicle home, leaving their van to transport us in the canoe after the trip. Paul wanted to go through a river lock. You needed to sound a horn to get the lock master's attention. So Paul took along the squeeze bulb horn from his bicycle. It was loud. We launched by the light of the full moon and headed into the current. When a tugboat pushing barges, came along, we moved toward the nearest bank, then turned the canoe back to breast the waves from the passing craft's wake. In a backwater, called a slough, we brewed tea on Paul's King Sophia camp stove, which burned white gasoline. Earlier, we'd passed a creek running out of the Iowa Stone Cliffs. We'd scooped up a gallon of relatively fresh water, putting the jar in the bottom of the canoe to let the mud settle out.
Hey, back to that camp stove. You were able to put that into the canoe?
Yeah, it was an aluminum canoe, and so that was just in the floor of the canoe.
Okay.
Among us four guys.
Because canoes are easy to tip.
Yeah, that's true, but we didn't tip it.
Too much stuff in there.
We were all good canoeists, and later I would become a better canoeist, but an hour later, 4 inches of sediment lay at the bottom of the jar. Paul dipped clear water from the top, put it into a bottle, and dropped in iodine tablets. We boiled the water for half an hour, steeping some black tea leaves in it. Today I'd take along fresh water, but ignorance seemed bliss. We enjoyed our tea with honey and ate warmed-up homemade biscuits. About midnight, we reached the upstream gate of Lock 12. A sign read, "Sound horn and pull rope to enter lock." We pulled the rope. Paul gave 3 long blasts on his bicycle horn. The lock master looked down and asked, "What on earth are you doing out here on the river in the middle of the night?" "Oh, there's a full moon," replied Paul. "I see," answered the lock master. "Well, then I'd best get you through the lock." As we entered the lock, we could see everything around us. Then, from our perspective, the lock walls began to rise. We in the water were actually descending. Soon all we saw were high walls, and the lockmaster open the lower gate. He had left a bit of extra water in the lock, so it went rushing out downstream, as did we.
Mm.
What a thrill. Hours later, a string of barges came upriver. The pilot turned his powerful searchlight on our little canoe, blinding us. We waved. He tooted his horn, blasting us with his outsized sound.
Hey, he tooted his horn. Do you know where the origination of that phrase?
No, I do not.
Why you're tooting your horn?
But if you toot your own horn, it means you're bragging.
Yeah.
Near dawn, the lights of the Savannah-Sibula Bridge appeared. Just beyond the Fjellstad van awaited. That overnight canoe trip was my most appreciated graduation gift.
Hmm.
Every boy should have friends who lead him, as safely as possible, into fascinating adventures in good company.
In good company, of course.
In good company.
Copyright Rob Seidenberg, rob@primelifetimes.com, rob@primelifetimes.com. And you have a bunch of canoe stories because we live on the Sangamon River. And so we used to drop the Jeep off downstream because we would forge or get right in from our yard.
Yeah.
And I had a floating dock. Nobody has a floating dock in a river, but I created one with the help of others. And so we just float downstream to, well, float and paddle downstream to wherever our car was. And then we get out, put it in, and then come back home. But
I think it's great.
Haven't done that for about 3 or 4 years. Pre-COVID, it's been a long time since I've been on the mighty Sangamon. It can be like a foot deep, and it can be 15 foot deep. Usually it's about a foot or two deep, but the mighty Sangamon nonetheless. All right, 5 more minutes. What else do we have?
Okay, we have Wordsmith's Workshop.
Yes, what page?
Back to page A15.
Okay.
Back where we started. Near the bottom of the page in the left-hand column, we have Wordsmith's Workshop.
By Rob Seidenberg.
And we have this wonderful word, anatidiphobia. Now, it has nothing to do with bees, by the way.
Well, we know phobias aren't good.
Anatidiphobia. I hope you never need this word. Anatidiphobia is the fear that a duck might be watching you.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, some people suffer from this phobia. I don't, in fact. I enjoy it when ducks watch me, especially when I can also watch them. The word derives from two Greek words, anatidae, our scientific category that includes swans, ducks, and geese, and phobos, meaning fear. Caveat, cartoonist Gary Larson coined this term, which isn't in Merriam-Webster's dictionary.
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time in that dictionary last night at our class, but so there really are people that are fearful of ducks.
Yes, or fearful that a duck might be peeking and looking at them.
Well, I have a friend that's fearful of frogs. He's just terrified. He can't look at them or see them or...
I have a suggestion. Introduce him to deep-fried frog legs.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Now, some animal lover is going to write in and excoriate me, but... They're delicious, Mark.
Anatidiphobia?
Yes, that's
anatidiphobia. Right. Oh, very interesting. Okay, we have time for something else. We're looking at our May edition of the Prime Life Times publication, winner of 29 national awards. We have a great team. We appreciate all the volunteers that helped deliver this publication to 400 area locations. There's probably one near you, and you can find out more at primelifetimes.com, primelifetimes.com, and look under the distribution link.
On A3, we have Skywatcher, which is a regular monthly feature. A dear friend used to do a lot of our proofreading for us, and she knows somebody
who knows somebody who knows somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
And if they tell two friends and they tell two friends, you've seen that commercial,
yes,
right?
Yes, I have. But this lady's grandson lives in Indiana, quite a ways from here, and she makes sure that this particular grandson always gets the latest issue of the Prime Life Times, and he follows it and gets out his little telescope with his friends, and they watch whatever's in the night sky that we warn them to be watching for.
Mm.
So this is a sky watcher for May, page A3, right-hand column, the Antidequarian meteor shower appearing each night, April 19 through May 28, peaks on May 6th, with up to 50 meteors per hour. It's a southern hemisphere phenomenon, so look low in the southern sky toward the east just before dawn. The May 6th peak comes 2 days before the new moon, dark of the moon. If we get a clear sky, we might see some meteors, which originate from Halley's Comet, the comet we see every 75 years or so. May's full moon, the flower moon, is brightest at 8:53 a.m. Central Daylight Time, 9:53 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thursday, May 23. The Algonquin tribes gave it this name. We can't actually see this full moon when it first occurs because it will be below the horizon, but look for it the preceding night, May 22, or the following night, May 24. By now, most of you will have caught my misprint because it should not be daylight time. It should be standard time by this time in May. So all of us make mistakes, even I.
I haven't made one since third grade.
There you go.
That was the last time.
Other Native American names for this full moon include the budding moon, the leaf budding moon, the planting moon, the Dakota and Lakota tribes, the egg-laying moon and frog moon, the Cree, and the moon of the shedding ponies, Oglala.
Recently, there was two nights this past weekend that I think
the Northern Lights.
Northern Lights. Okay, did you stay up for that?
I did, but it turned out it was better to get up at 4 o'clock. You'd see more. But a good friend of mine actually did stay up and saw them two nights in a row. So,
well, what people had told me, two different sources said that if you took a picture, you actually saw more of it than what the naked eye could see. So if you had your camera and you took a picture, it looked a lot better, and it's like, wow, I didn't really discern that through my eyes.
I didn't know I saw something this good.
So I don't know if you stayed up and got to enjoy that. But
I hope a lot of people saw that. That was a nice thing at our latitude. 40 degrees here, folks.
All right, listening friend, we have the Wednesday edition of Mark and Friends in the hopper, as they say, or in the can. We've accomplished it on short notice. I appreciate Rob Seenberg, our copy editor, being available on short notice with very little show prep because we're trying to figure out the studio here, but it seems like our voices are coming through and you're able to tune in. Yeah, we continue to pray up our developments in Decatur. We're looking at all different tower sites and trying to get 100.1 back on the air. Appreciate your prayers on behalf of that. And we're working with a lot of engineers and even was looking at the Decatur municipality or something. They had a tower next to their building that is another option. We keep weighing all the different things. And then we need FCC approval and then to make sure it doesn't interfere with anything else and it eliminates some of the interference from another station that's close on the dial. So we keep praying that up and hopefully it'll be back to being on the air in the coming days or months. But appreciate your prayers and your participation in this radio ministry. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the great news media, the WLUJ family of stations, and being a listener that hopefully you're being encouraged and blessed as you tuned in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Rob Seidenberg with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you. Have a great day and night.